Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, this is episode 295. Five episodes away from 300. Unbelievable. Anyway, let's get right into the news. First and foremost, I just want to apologize for last week's episode. Probably a good number of you heard the episode before I had to edit it. It was first called 294, Peleg and Hiram, and it was a cool article, a great article, actually, from the Scottish Rite Research Society, but they contacted me about the copyright, so I did have to remove that, and we put in a bit about your personal Masonic speech. So while I feel both episodes, both versions of the episode are great, I would have preferred to keep that Scottish Rite episode in. However, we did need to amend the episode, so if you're listening to it now, you get the 294 Euromasonic speech. And so for that, I just wanted to apologize for any confusion. You didn't miss an episode, and it's just, we had to do what we had to do. To be legal, this week on the program, we've got a talk with Frater O, and we had some interesting discussion regarding just a few pieces, things like the checkered floor, the emblazoned star, and some of the other aspects that are not really described in the degrees in esoteric fashion that perhaps they should be. We had a couple people suggest that we do some additional esoteric 101 type stuff, and so we did. We called this one Esoteric 102, kind of like the next class, right? So just some news for this week. Chris Hodapp did post about the shot heard round the world, an article that was posted in the Northern Light magazine. I guess for what it's worth, it's an interesting read from illustrious brother McNaughton of the Northern Jurisdiction. And I don't know, I guess I kind of have some issues with the direction there, but an interesting read nonetheless. I would check it out if you guys get a chance. I also wanted to mention that we are getting very close, I believe 6 weeks away now, from the biggest Masonic conference you'll ever go to. 300, Freemasonry's Legacy, Freemasonry's Future. June 23rd, we're going to have early arrivals, registration, beginning at noon. In the evening, we're going to do some pizza, fellowship, and some Facebook Live. It'll be really fun. On the 24th, George Washington Masonic National Memorial. We'll have a welcome, some short introductions, a brief history of the United Grand Lodge of England by Brother Mike Hambrick, a piece called The Craftsman's Journey by Brother Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd degree. Over lunch, we are going to have just some great fellowship. We'll have a breakout discussion, a break, some more breakout discussion, a breakout discussions part 3, and between all of these, we'll have some Masonic trivia. There's going to be a cocktail hour, festive board with a special speaker, Mark Tabbert, which will be really great. And then an afterglow, cocktails, discussion, and fellowship. And we've got a couple questions and answers. First and foremost, will there be hotels to stay at a discounted rate? And there sure will. So if you call 1-800-331-3131 and mention the code TMRConRoomBlock, then you can reserve your room. And remember, the last day to reserve for this is May 26th, so you need to get on that. It's the Alexandria Old Town Duke Street, the residence in there is going to do this for us. As far as vendors, we have a bunch of vendors lined up to come out. We've also had the question, can I bring my friend, wife, spouse, partner? Since this is a non-tiled event, you absolutely can. You don't have to be a Mason to attend. However, there will not be other programming running for these other people while you're doing Masonry. There's not going to be much for them to do. We don't have alternate programming. So keep that in mind. And also, everybody who comes through those doors does need to have a ticket. What will be the attire for the event? We're going to say business casual for the majority of the day, coat and tie for dinner on Saturday night. And if you want to get your tickets, please go now to themasonicroundtable.com/300 and pick up a ticket. It's going to be a really fun time. We've got over 100 people registered to come, and that doesn't include special guests. So please come on out. You're going to have an amazing time. And lastly, before we get started, I just want to say happy Mother's Day. If you're listening to this after Mother's Day, happy belated Mother's Day. So with that, let's get right into this week's conversation. All right, everybody, we are back this week, and we're talking with Frater O. It's been a little while, but we are hanging out, and we're chit-chatting here, and we had a cool request just not too long ago about what our next esoteric discussion would be about. But before we get into that, again, just want to welcome back Fratero. So thanks for coming back on the program, brother.
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure to be back on. And thanks again for having me on. I'm looking forward to getting into the topic requested.
Yeah, absolutely. So just really quick, if you guys missed it, we were both at Masonic Con up in Attleboro, Massachusetts. It was a fantastic event. And if you were there, then you actually got to meet Fratero in person. It was pretty cool. We swore the audience to secrecy. It was pretty fun. So it was really cool. So this evening, or whenever you're listening to this, our topic was suggested that we cover some more basic esoteric concepts, because it's felt that so much of the fraternity still doesn't grasp that. Many of the newer members who joined are into that, but many of the people who have been in for a while, whether they're young or old, in years that is, are interested, but they just don't know where to start. And so we did a show kind of like an Esoterics 101 before. It was an easy title to pick, right? Esoterics 102. So I think what I try to do is I picked a few interesting characters from each degree, and by characters, things that are said, symbols that are displayed, and I figure we can just kind of bring those up and talk a little bit about them. So I guess I would start off with the checkered floor. That is an interesting concept, and in learning our rituals, in learning the lectures, we hear things something along the lines of the checkered floor, you know, emblematical or represents good and evil, negative and positive, or the opposites. But I guess you can take that several more layers deep. I've been in rooms where gentlemen are talking about things that are even almost beyond my comprehension, talking about magnetic ley lines and things, but to kind of pull it in a little bit more, we want to talk more beginner esoteric stuff. And so I guess I want to toss it up to Fratero. What can you tell us about the checkered floor and maybe some beginning concepts that newer and old Masons who are just now getting into the deeper symbolism can contemplate?
When you get over to Europe, the checkerboard floor is prevalent in every single lodge. And then when you travel through the United States, you might see it, you might not. You know, if you're in a lodge now and you're a Mason, you don't have it, I recommend visiting a lodge and then reflecting on one degree in particular that talks about the checkerboard floor. And, you know, the polarity is an interesting thing. I think we did a kind of a discussion, one episode in particular, about polarity. Positive, negative can be found consistently through any esoteric system, any school. Majority of philosophy gets into polarity or causality, cause and effect. Or if you get into more mystic religions, you can always consistently see it with, like, you get into the Tao, you see the yin and the yang. You know, you get into the Kabbalah, you have An and An's soul, positive and negative with Reiki. You get into a lot of yoga principles, they refer to it as either the sun and the moon, or Ha and Tha, which is kind of gets into Hatha yoga, which is the Sanskrit translation for male or female, right? So you always have this consistent principle of polarity that exists everywhere in the universe. But the whole idea, if you can get into a lot of the fictional tales we've done with Star Wars and a lot of stories, there's always that battle between the dark and the battle between light. And yeah, that floor is really emblematic of more the, in life's journey, you're never going to be on both squares, right? So if you're, I think Aristotle said it best, you have some lean years and you have some fat years. And with life's journey, you're going to have this checkerboard floor. You're going to go back and forth between the dark square being tough time or challenging dark times or ages of growth to progress to the light square. But polarity is a beautiful thing, is because without one, you're not going to have the other. So without the dark times, you're not going to be able to appreciate the good times. For me and for my studies, the checkerboard floor is so emblematic of the polarity aspect that is everywhere in the universe, from a battery to your human body. The human body has polarity throughout the whole body, from majority of every single endocrine gland that gets into Eastern philosophy or schools with chakras. You're going to find, you know, two reproductive systems, two adrenaline glands, two lungs, you know, two chambers of the heart. There's going to be two sides of the thyroid, two sides of the brain. There's polarities prevalent, especially to make another human being. You need to have a male and a female, another polar aspect. So yeah, it's interesting. You can take that and you can get into science. You can get into polarity of planets, polarity of universes, stars, or that's going up, but going back down and going underneath the microscope, you can clearly see that there's a polarity charge to atoms. There's a positive and a negative charge. It's a very emblematic theme that has consisted on so many levels of the human experience or the mind or psyche or every aspect of science. Yeah, is there anything that you would like to kind of chime in on?
Well, I was sitting there listening and you really hit the nail on the head talking about really just that positive, negative, and all of the elements in our lives that are opposites. In fact, a lot of our listeners know that we've been working on a book project for a while and I'm finally starting to make some real progress after I got a swift kick in the butt from a really good friend. His name is Bull Garlington, and he does a Masonic thing on, Masonic writers, and really kind of gave me a kick in the butt to get start writing again. And what was interesting was just recently I started writing a bit of the chapter about the differences in the positive and the negative, the East versus the West type differences relating to the occult anatomy. Many people out there have seen these occult anatomy pictures all over the internet, and really what we're doing is pretty intense with this book. But I just finished writing, probably 5 or 6 paragraphs on these opposites that exist in these occult anatomy photos. And I feel like so much of what's represented there can really just, it almost supersedes everything else and becomes the foundation of what I think when I talk about the checkerboard floor or the checkered floor. So really cool. Something else you touched on there was, we talked about, right, the as above, so below, the positive, the negative, the high, the low. And with that, we touch on necessarily the idea of macrocosm, microcosm. And to the average guy who's listening, who doesn't follow any of this stuff, when we break it down to like the most simple concepts, which, and no disrespect, this is just me talking because I need simple concepts. My friends know me as a guy who takes complex situations, understands them, and then dummies them way down for other people and for myself. So when we think about the macrocosm or the universe, when we look at a solar system, when we look at a galaxy, and we look at the individual pieces that comprise these humongous things, when we tend to look internally and we use like scanning electron microscopes, we see the same structures and the same shapes at the micro level. And so what we have is like this idea of the micro and the macro, but kind of tangentially moving over to the idea of planets. We did touch on that a little bit, and some guys have asked why the senior deacon in a Masonic lodge and the junior deacon, they carry rods or staffs, and at the top of one of them is a moon, and at the top of the other is a sun, and they think, oh, it just must be this allegorical thing, or it just must be the symbol, but what's the explanation behind that? And I've heard multiple presentations by great minds studying extensively the correlation between Masonic officers, or really the five chairs or the seven chairs, or the five chairs plus the altar and candidate, all equate to a special formula where each one of them represents a solar body. And I can kind of touch on the idea that when we do circumambulation, so for the profane or the uninitiated out there, a circumambulation really is this concept of walking in a circle around a central point. And this is done in a Masonic lodge. Basically, the roots of the practice go back to not just any old ancient civilizations. We're talking about, of course, ancient Native American civilizations. We're talking about ancient Japan, ancient Asia, and pretty much every ancient culture has some sort of circumambulation practice. And for our junior deacon, the way he circumambulates is in the same direction the moon goes around Earth. And the senior deacon, representing the sun, moves in the same direction the sun moves. So it's really interesting that that's right there in the forefront. But I almost wonder if we can talk a little bit about what the other officers might represent. So I'll turn it over to Frater O for maybe some keen thoughts.
Some really good books that get deeper into this. H.P. Bromwell's symbolism book that the Grand Lodge of Colorado republished. Kevin Townley did an amazing job out there. Hopefully we get a chance down the road to get him on. Off the top of my head, I'm honestly not prepared to talk about what lodge officers represents each planet.
Sure.
However, if you get into Bromwell's book, he gets extensively into the geometry of the floor and the ideology and correlations between the two, as well as Brown's book of Masonic astronomy and theology, which is a nice foundation and, you know, a good segue for a future show. You know, you've mentioned this in the past about having Brother John Ruark on. He gives an amazing presentation on the astronomy and the correlations between the lodge floor. And I'm not sure if he's kind of really ventured into the actual lodge officers, but this might be something. If John, if you're listening, you can segue that show, or, you know, the future show, and adding those in, that'd be great. But when it depends on what state you get into, digressing back to the lodge and the officers, is that we go in that, like you said, circular ambulation. There's a lot of cool things that are hidden there. So when you're in lodge, and if you're a Mason and you're listening, like, man, I've never thought about this before, take like 10 deep breaths before you go into lodge and try to be really present. Try to really focus on everything that's going on. There's a reason why everything's going on a certain way. There's a reason why for hundreds of years this ritual's been preserved and going. There's a whole lot presented. Take in and just be mindful of what officers wear, who's where and why. There's a lot of unique correlations that go on in all 3 degrees, and there's so much to take in. We've used this expression many times in the show in the past. It's like drinking through a fire hose when you're watching the degrees, or even when you're going through them, there's just so much to take in. And just be mindful that when you do this in inner work, the more you look at something, the more you're going to see. And it doesn't mean you have to read a book. It means you're just going to learn to quiet the mind, quiet yourself. Now, I know I'm kind of going on a tangent about yourself, which that's me. Is, you know, that if you're listening to the show, that's kind of my character. Getting back to the lodge floor, there's a whole lot presented there. And, yeah, unfortunately, I just can't speak a whole lot on it. I mean, it sounds like you know more than I do, RJ. Do you want to kind of, like, take it from here?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I guess some of the interesting correlations that I've heard, and again, to your point, Frater, that it's not exactly always something that you can just reveal. Rather, it's something that's realized, because that is the nature of our experience as Masons. You can watch all the shows you want, but until you go through the degrees and you experience them, it means something totally different to you. But I have heard certain things, perhaps the worshipful master is Jupiter, or things in that realm. And I guess let's table that then, and we will move on to another piece. One of the things mentioned in the first degree, I guess kind of staying with that theme, macrocosm, is the emblazoned star, which is usually somewhere on the mosaic pavement, somewhere in the middle, or represented by the altar itself. Sometimes it's even on the ceiling. We're told in the degrees that the emblazoned star represents divine providence. And I guess we can take a moment to talk about that concept of divine providence and how it fits into Masonry. So for me, what I take out of divine providence is kind of like the idea of the secret, or your own personal manifest destiny. Any thoughts?
The star is a very interesting pagan symbol, and it goes back even further from pagan ideology. You can trace back the five-pointed star to, you know, going back to ancient Egypt. You can find it in Templar cathedrals. It's very prevalent if you can trace the lineages back. And, you know, it's fascinating, the ancient Illuminati, the order that died, that was all about the ideology of enlightenment, not this crazy conspiracy that the Illuminati has been made up to be by current modern media and news sources. But when you get into these deeper ideologies of what the star represents, it was pretty emblematic of the ideology of the human body. And Manly P. Hall gets into this in one of his chapters in The Secret Teachings of All Ages, and how each part of the body is the star, right? So you have the top part of the star is the head. If you look at each side, is the arms and then the legs. And each one of those areas, the points of the star, was an element for the ancient alchemists, even in alchemy as well, which is, you could find alchemy always kind of trickles in as a melting pot into a lot of these deeper esoteric orders. And you have the earth, air, water, and fire. And of course, we've mentioned the past, the fifth element. And the fifth element, which is directly in the center, which is you.
And it should be noted here that the star that you're talking about and the star that we're referring to has typically 5 points. But I'll let you continue.
Usually directly in the center of the star too is that you can find the letter G. It gets a little weird when you kind of get into the old craft masonry. In Europe, you can find the yod, which kind of is represented in the 14th degree in the Scottish Rite. You can find that there too. G is symbolic of geometry, or even the ideology of Gnosis, which has been referred to as well. And well, it's kind of getting back into the God or the great architect of the universe, which Masons refer to as a supreme being, whatever you may call your God that you worship. It's the absolute universe. It's the macrocosm. It's the heart of man. It is the center. Is what, personally speaking, what the G is emblematic of, the blazing star. And I would love to hear, and I've covered a lot. Hopefully I didn't steal all your thunder.
No. So within the star, it is really interesting that there is some things that I'm very hesitant to reveal, and not because they're taught in a Masonic lodge. Certainly, I would say 99% of what we're telling you in this show is not taught in a lodge, guys. This is extra supplemental information that comes from years of studying occult references, studying very famous, prolific Masonic authors. And so again, some of the things that I am hesitant to talk about, because it's really about your journey to revelation rather than us revealing something to you. However, I think along the way, some breadcrumbs are probably necessary. So with the star, you have the 5 points. And if you missed our episode a while back with Dr. Bruce S. Fisher, he touches on this, and it's so imperative in understanding the deeper allegory here, is that the star is typically made up of the 5 points. The points of the star are made up of angles of 72 degrees each. The 72 degree angle times 5 is your 360 degrees, representing the circle. So that circle, again, maybe there's a correlation here for you within the circle, the point within the circle. We talk about the circumpunct. There is the idea of the circle in ancient languages, the circle representing the sun. But it's interesting that the star represents emblematically, through mathematical calculation, an ancient symbol of itself. Maybe that is something to contemplate for you. But in addition, is even deeper than that. And those deeper aspects, I can't go into them here, because it is, you can get into some really dangerous thinking as far as your cognizant level. I mean, you have to remember to keep 1 foot on Earth. So it can be difficult. So I guess let's move on to...
To piggyback off of what you mentioned, the blazing star is really interesting too. If you take that 5-pointed star and you look at the center of it, there's a pentagon in the center of that. And then inside the pentagon, you can create another star. And then inside the 5-pointed star, another pentagon. So you can see these interesting symbology. And if you're into geometry, there's a whole lot represented there. And so we've spoken the show in the past about Math Magic Land, right? That Donald Duck goes to this amazing Disney cartoon that was done in the 1960s, was it? 1970s?
Yep, late '60s.
And we'll put a link in the show if you haven't seen it. It's awesome. It gets into geometry, gets into esoterics and philosophy. the interesting thing about the five-pointed star is that that was the ancient symbol of the Pythagoreans as well. And they had a tattoo that they would show each other. And it's funny, Donald Duck gets a tattoo. And so I'm not going to ruin it. But, you know, it's so unfortunate that five-pointed star has been really over the past, I don't know, 100 years, maybe 200 years, through Christianity and through dogma, has really kind of had a negative annotation around it. But really, if you trace it back and you read and you do the research, you can see this symbol has been around for thousands and thousands of years. And we mentioned earlier, you can find it on temples and shrines. But Albert Pike, he's reported that supposedly that the, to quote, Sirius glitters in our lodges as the blazing star, to quote him from Morals and Dogma. And how important that, you know, that five star really is. And we don't want to reveal too much, but just, you know, there's a whole lot there. Feel free to explore. And, you know, if you think we're wrong, let us know. If you think you find something better, reach out to us. It's all about sharing information and allowing other people to pick up the working tools after you set.
Absolutely. And I guess I want to touch on something that is always sticking out in my mind, and it's a bit from the second degree, one of the pieces of lecture work, just a brief piece of it. And I think what this really represents is the idea of various levels of meaning, or the admission, at the very least, that the minds of the initiates, of the minds of the candidates, are so different. However, they have something, you know, in common. And this comes from a portion of a lecture on geometry. Numberless worlds are all around us, framed by the same divine artist, which roll through the vast expanse and are conducted by the same unerring law of nature. And so within that quote, I feel like it's a self-admission that there are several different realities, that there are several different meanings, per se, behind so many of our symbols. And it's all there for the taking if you dive in. To sit there and read a lecture or to listen to it and take it at face value is, frankly, disheartening. If you do that, I really implore you to dig deeper, to look at the philosophy behind it. There are so many meanings to the words. It's poetic in its license, but it's prolific. And I think we need to really study those symbols, and we need to look at the deeper meaning behind everything. Because it's not just like, oh, it's a star and it means this. Or it's not just a tessellated border and it means all the things that you have in your life that make things comfortable. It's more than that. And I really hope you guys dig deep. And if you have a question on a symbol, reach out to somebody. And if they don't give you the answer that you want, then reach out to somebody else. You can email Frodero. You can email me. You can email John Ruark. You can email anybody who's out there on social media, who has a podcast. You got a world of knowledge out there between guys like Alex from Historical Light Podcast, guys like, you know, myself and Frodero, and the guys from TMR, and the Prince Hall Think Tank. I mean, all of these guys out there who are producing content have such a fire that burns in them, and they want to assist everybody in understanding the deeper aspects, in understanding masonry, and help you fulfill your space in the fraternity, if that makes sense.
It's a lot of sense, and very well said. We might not have the answers, but we might be able to connect you with someone. Or, you know, it's like when you showed up to that lodge door, no one held your hand. It's like anything in any aspect of your life, regardless of any undertaking, regardless if it's personal, or, you know, or business or family or whatever it may be, you just have to grab the bull by the horns and go searching. No one's going to hand anything to you in a silver platter. That's how the universe works. And, you know, digressing back to the polarity of the floor, the universe is going to test you to make sure what you really want, what you're going after. So these deeper mysteries are really prevalent in all three degrees. You just have to go searching for them. And this is a journey for you, the candidate, and you only. You know, we can tell you the answers, and we can tell you it's this or it's X or Y or Z, but those are our own personal answers. That's our own dogma that we've defined by ourselves. But the most important journey is taking that journey for yourself. But, you know, it's been claimed so well by Joseph Campbell as the hero's journey.
So with that, I think we're going to call it for this week. I hope we gave you some great insight into some of the deeper aspects of some of the symbols. And if we didn't talk about something you were curious about, shoot us an email. Or maybe we gave you a little bit of a validation into the way you feel about a certain symbol. And maybe it will spark some light within you to go out and do even more research. So thanks very much to our always returning guest, co-host, Frodero, thanks for coming back on.
It's always an honor and pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So everybody, please check out the show notes, follow Frodero on Facebook, and make sure you like the page. That way you get some of the really, really kick-ass stuff that he shares there. Some stuff will just blow your mind. So thanks again. All right, you can find everything, hopefully, that we talked about in the show notes. Hopefully next week we will have another 10 for 10. And in the meantime, please enjoy the Masonic Roundtable, which is another Masonic podcast that goes live at 10, 9 Central every Tuesday. And if you love to read interesting articles, check out the Midnight Freemasons, where we publish 3 new articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And just to let you all know, the latest talks that I'm doing that are going around, of course, I always do the Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern beginnings. I do a piece which can be Master Mason or open. It is the Tetragrammaton or the Lost Word. I do an Esoterics 101. We do one called Connecting Masons Through Technology. I do a presentation on the Rite of Memphis Mizraim. And I also do one called Finding Truth, How to Do Masonic Research. So in that one, I basically focus on what you need to do to establish yourself as an authority in Masonic writing. When's the next time I'm going to be at a lodge doing a talk? You can find that if you go to our website, wcypodcast.com, and then just hover over About and then scroll down to Presentation Schedule, where you'll see a list of the different topics that I'll talk about and dates that I'm doing those. So June 7th at the Jefferson City Grand York Rite Sessions in Missouri, I'll be doing a talk on the Word or the Tetragrammaton. June 8th, the next day, I'll be in Hesperia Lodge in Chicago doing Connecting Masons Through Technology. On the 21st, in Columbus, Ohio, York 563 at the Northwest Masonic Temple, I'll be doing Esoterics 101, and then of course June 23rd, 24th, Freemasonry's Legacy, Freemasonry's Future, and get your tickets there from themasonicroundtable.com/300. I've got something lined up in October, possibly. We will see. In any other case, there's also a schedule for pretty much anywhere I'm going to be. It's a little Google calendar there so you can see where I'll be. Hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope you guys come back next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.